राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवार धारी यशोद नंदन गज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन गज जन रंजन जमुना तीरा वनचारी जमुना तीरा वनचारी मुना तीरा जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवार धारी राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवार धारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Prabhupada Prabhupada, 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 Jaya, Jaya, Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Thay Gaur Premanandi. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chanda Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chanda Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. So we're reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 22, and verses 121 to 125 is what I've been assigned. So we'll just do the recitation for the first one, and then I'll read the translations for the other ones. Shravana Kirtana Smarana Pujana Vandana Paricharya Dasya Sakya Atmanivedana. Shravana Kirtana Smarana Pujana Vandana Paricharya Dasya Sakya Atmanivedana. Shravana Kirtana Smarana Pujana Vandana Paricharya Dasya Sakya Atmanivedana. Please repeat. Shravana Kirtana Pujana Vandana. Shravana Kirtana Smarana Pujana Vandana Paricharya Dasya Sakya Atma Nivedana. So translations, I'm just going to read verses 121 to 125 translations. After one is established in devotional service, the positive actions are hearing, chanting, remembering, worshiping, praying, serving, accepting servitorship, becoming a friend, and surrendering fully. One should also dance before the deity, sing before the deity, open one's mind to the deity, offer respectful obeisances to the deity, stand up before the deity and the spiritual master just to show them respect, follow the deity or the spiritual master and visit different places of pilgrimage or go see the deity in the temple. One should circumambulate the temple, recite various prayers, chant softly, chant congregationally, smell the incense and flower garland offered to the deity, and eat the remnants of food offered to the deity. One should attend aarti and festivals, see the deity, present what is very dear to oneself to the deity, meditate on the deity, and serve those related to the Lord. Tadiya means tulsi, tulsi leaves. The devotees of Krishna, the birthplace of Krishna, Mathura, and the Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is very eager to see his devotees serve tulsi, Vaishnavas, Mathura, and Bhagavatam. Om Jnana Timidam Dasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Jakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyabadi Paschatya Deshatadine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, we are in the section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which the Lord is speaking to Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami is fortunate he got to spend 60 days with Lord Chaitanya, hearing from him directly. But before we get to that part of Sanatana Goswami meeting Lord Chaitanya, I felt it was important, at least I was inspired, to meditate on and read about the journey that Sanatana Goswami had before he got to stand in front of the Lord. Because his journey wasn't an ordinary one. It was quite a challenging and difficult one. And sometimes I think it's really important to meditate on the journey of our acharyas, what their journey was like, what they went through before they could actually meet the Lord and do the kind of service that they did, and in what mood they began that journey. So Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami's younger brother, they very reluctantly took up service or jobs under the Nawab Hussein Shah, right, who was ruling, who was a fairly cruel ruler, wasn't a very kind ruler. I don't know if there are any kind rulers, but maybe there are. But because they were very well connected, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, because they were very connected with the society, the people respected them, they knew Sanskrit, they knew the Persian language, so they could communicate, they were well respected, they were trusted. So the Nawab Hussein Shah thought, well, it would be great to employ these individuals. It would make it easier for him to rule because people would listen to whatever they said. So if he wanted to pass some laws through them, people would listen. So they didn't really want to work under him because the way he ruled and just the things he was doing, sort of persecuting the Hindu population, they didn't want to take up that occupation. However, he threatened them, basically said that if you don't work for me, then what's going to happen is I'm going to start torturing and persecuting the Hindu population around you. So you have two options, either to live very luxuriously under me, and I'm going to give you all facilities, everything, or you can sit by and watch as I begin to, you know, cause harm to the local population. So he didn't give them much choice, actually. And they lived very luxuriously. He made them the home minister and the prime minister. Those are the highest posts you can actually get within the government, the prime minister and the home minister. And they were given palaces to live in, servants, tremendous wealth. They were also collecting taxes so they could keep portions of that. I mean, what I've heard is they were not just millionaires. That would be a very low scale. They were like hundreds of millions is what they had in their possessions. That's kind of the wealth that they had. So, but at one point, they realized that Lord Chaitanya, that Krishna had descended as Lord Chaitanya. They understood that. And so then they started writing letters. Because once they found out he was there, they were starting to lose interest in their government post. Because also they weren't happy doing that. Because they were coming from very high-level Brahmin families. So they were very elevated, and then to have to do these political kind of jobs and always, you know, bringing in politics, and just, it was not something that they wanted. They were great at it, but they didn't want to do it, especially now that Lord Chaitanya had descended. So they were always writing letters to Lord Chaitanya, hoping to get some kind of a response, and he wouldn't respond. And then one point he responded by saying that, you know, you should do your duty very chastely to the Nawab, so he doesn't understand what's going on and that you actually have something else in mind. But he wrote it in a very coded form. He said that just as a woman who has a paramour, another lover other than her husband, behaves very nicely to her husband, so he doesn't pick up on anything. Very interesting, coming from a sannyasi, that kind of an example to give to Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And so he wrote that so that if somebody else got the letter, they wouldn't be able to pick up on what the messaging was. But he knew they were intelligent enough to figure it out. So then at one point, gradually they were making plans on how to get out and go meet Lord Chaitanya and personally receive instructions from him. So Rupa Goswami was the first to leave. He took a lot of money with him. He gave a lot of it to to the brahmanas. He gave like half away to the brahmanas. Some of it he kept gave to family. 25% he gave to family, another 25% he kept for emergency purposes, because he knew that maybe Sanatana Goswami would also need that money to get out. So he kept some. So he very responsibly divided up the money. The way he divided up the money isn't necessarily the way we would divide up our money, unless we're taking sannyasa and we have no family, because I'm not sure if, at least I haven't read that they had families or not. I don't know if they were married, they had kids. It doesn't say, actually. Or at least I haven't come across it. So they divide it up in the way that they needed to. It doesn't mean that that's how we're supposed to divide up our money. You know, if we have families, then that becomes our priority, obviously. So Rupa Goswami left to go see Lord Chaitanya. And now Sanatan Goswami was by himself. And now he's losing more motivation to do what he's doing, because now Rupa Goswami's gone, and now it's just Sanatan Goswami. So basically he stops showing up to work and he stops doing his duties. And then what happens is the Nawab Hussein Shah gets a little suspicious, checks up on him, and sees that there's nothing wrong. He's just sitting and reading Bhagavatam and studying Bhagavatam with Brahmanas, and he's not doing his duty. So he says that, I really need you to get back to work. And basically Sanatan Goswami took a really long sick leave. That's what basically happened. So the Nawab Hussein Shah got very upset, said, no, I need you to get back to work. I need your help in ruling the kingdom. And Sanatan Goswami said, you know, I'm just not interested in doing this. I don't want to do this anymore. So being very upset, Nawab Hussein Shah threw him in jail. And then he went off to try to conquer Puri, Jagannath Puri, Orissa. And so Sanatan Goswami is now in jail. So here's his journey, the beginning of his journey. I mean, his journey began earlier. But he's now sitting in jail. Rupa Goswami's probably on his way, maybe already with Mahaprabhu. And Sanatan Goswami is now trying to figure out, well, how do I get out of here? Now, being an expert politician, he always behaved nicely with the staff, you can say, the guards, the soldiers. He's a politician. And even if you are the leader, if you don't have good relationships with people, they won't cooperate with you. It shouldn't be understood that it's automatically that people are just going to cooperate with you simply because you hold the title of a leader. So even though he was the home minister and everyone had to do what he said, he always made sure to maintain a good, positive, healthy relationship with the people that were the staff, the soldiers, everyone. And he had helped them as much as he could. So they really liked him. So one of the guards in the prison, Sanatan Goswami, said, look, I've helped you so much in the past. I've tried to help your family as much as I could. I've been kind. And now I need your help. I want to go on pilgrimage to Mecca. And you know, as a spiritual man, you're a very elevated, educated, spiritual person. So he was glorifying him, you know, bolstering his ego. You know that a person who helps someone else go on pilgrimage also gets tremendous benefit. So by helping me, you're helping yourself, actually. See, he's a great politician. He's doing his job well. And this person said, I know you've helped me, and I want to help you. But if the Nawab Hussein Shah finds out that I helped you escape, you know what he's going to do to me? Sanatan Goswami said, well, tell you what. I know this is a difficult decision. Here's 5,000 gold coins for you. Now, this is not just like $5,000. Okay? This is not like $5,000. I don't even know 500 years ago what one solid gold coin was worth. I mean, like an ounce of gold is like $3,000 or something. So he gave him 5,000 gold coins. Boom, right there. Right? Solid gold money right there. And so now this guy is a little bewildered. He's like, okay, yeah. He's like, yeah, this is definitely very helpful in me making my decision. You've definitely helped me, but I'm still a little worried. What if they find out, and what's going to happen to me? Sanatan Goswami said, okay, whatever doubts there are, here's a few thousand more gold coins. Bam. And at this point, I'm assuming that must have been worth in the millions. I'm assuming that was worth in the millions, because this was like solid, pure gold coins. It must have been. So now he's got some options. And Sanatan Goswami also explains to him, gives him a plan, says, if the Nawab Hussein Shah asks what happened, Just tell him that you took me to the river to respond to the call of nature, and I jumped into the river with my shackles and everything, and that I drowned and I died. So that's the story you can tell him. And I'm going to go off to another town. I'm going to go off somewhere else. You'll never see me again, so I'm never showing up here again. So he will actually believe that I'm dead. And now he was pretty convinced with, 10,000 or whatever gold coins in front of him. Good reason and logic, a great excuse. And Nawab's out of town. So he that night, in the middle of the night, he unshackles him. And now Sanatan Goswami is ready to go. His journey to meet Mahaprabhu has begun. And I think the journeys are very fascinating. It's very, very important to analyze the journey of Sanatan Goswami. Because he's not going on the main roads, because the main roads are being monitored by the Nawab Hussein Shah's people. So he can't go towards the main roads to get to Varanasi, which is where Mahaprabhu is. He's taking the back roads. And I remember looking this up from Ram Kaili to Varanasi, I believe it's like 500 miles. I remember Google mapping it about a week ago when I was asked to give class. Like, I'm just curious how far he traveled. I think it was about 500 miles or kilometers. Either way, it's not like, running from here to like Hitchcock's or something, right? It was, it's the back roads. It's not like camping trails that are marked on the trees, the red trail, the yellow trail. It's just unmarked territory. And he's trying to figure out, you make one wrong turn, you could end up in another part of the country. But obviously he knew where to go. He had some amazing spiritual compass that was guiding him to wherever he needed to go. So he had a servant with him, Ishan. So they left with nothing. But Ishan secretly stashed like 8 gold coins or something. He thought, well, maybe I'll need it. And Sanatan Goswami did not want to take any money with him. So at one point, they're running and they get to this inn. And the innkeeper had some astrologer tell him that the guests that you have, they have gold on them. So you can take it from them. And so Sanatan Goswami wasn't aware that there was gold with Ishan. So he goes in and the innkeeper is being really nice to them. And gives them food, gives them accommodation. Sanatan Goswami's thinking, we look like beggars, because they've been running through the jungle with barely any clothes. Why is this guy being so nice to us? I mean, like, we can't even pay him so why is he being so nice? Then he asks Isha, he's like, do you have some money with you? Did you bring like gold or something? He's saying, yeah, I did. I do have he said I have 7 gold coins, even though he had 8. He didn't even tell Mahaprabhu the whole truth. So Mahaprabhu said, why are you carrying this death knell with us? Someone's going to kill us for it. And that innkeeper, I want you to give me that money. He took it to the innkeeper. He said, we have these gold coins, and I want you to have them. And the innkeeper said, I knew you had them, and I was planning to kill you both tonight and take your money. Very honest innkeeper. Wow, you don't get that kind of honesty these days, right? You don't get, it's very refreshing honesty. Like, I was actually going to murder you tonight. Imagine if I said, I was planning to murder you tonight when you come to my home, but I changed my mind. Like, would you even fall asleep in that house? Like, what if this guy changes his mind again? So, and then the innkeeper said, I'm so touched by your honesty, I actually don't want them. Sanatan Goswami said, no, please take them and help me get through the hills. Find me somebody who can help me get through the hills and get to Varanasi. Because if you don't take this money, someone else is going to kill me for it. So you're actually doing me a favor. Sanatan Goswami, brilliant. Every word out of his mouth is just so brilliant and thoughtful. Real politician, just incredible, right? Like, if you're doing me a favor. Now that takes all the guilt out of this guy's mind for taking the money. He's like, oh, sure, I'm happy to do you a favor. And then he gets some people who can help Sanatan Goswami get through the hills and finally get to Varanasi. So, again, I believe it was about 500 kilometers. So it was a long journey. It wasn't an easy journey. It's not like they had food and stuff. I mean, just imagine how tough that journey was, right? It was not an easy journey. And it also shows the thoughtfulness of Rupa Goswami to keep aside. like 10,000 gold coins so that Sanatan Goswami would have something to use to get away. So obviously, everything they did was very planned out, very methodical, not just sort of like, we'll leave it up to Krishna, kind of. You know, it was planned out, I thought, you know? Yes, they're leaving it up to Krishna, but they're also planning and they're doing their part to make sure everything, as much as possible, can work out in the best way. And then finally, Sanatan Goswami gets to, I believe, the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya, and that's where they end up meeting. So, and I think most of our acharyas have very unique and interesting journeys. Not all of them may be as difficult as this one, right? This was obviously a little bit more difficult. And I mean, Prabhupada's journey was also incredibly difficult, right? I mean, it started with him getting money, printing back to Godhead, distributing them, getting more money, printing more, begging for passage, having heart attacks on the boat. Can you imagine sitting at the door of the ship owner until she agrees to give him passage? I mean, every journey is unique. He was 69, 70 years old. Obviously, Rupa and Sanatan were in the prime of their youth. But anyways, they're all unique, different journeys. That's the point. Prabhupada coming to the U.S. at 70 with a couple of heart attacks on the boat. Like, somehow he survived those heart attacks, dreaming of Krishna. You know, on that ship, it's an unbelievable journey. And I think his journey is what attracts most of the people who come to Krishna consciousness. I know his journey was mind-blowing for me. For my dad, it was also just like, that did it for him. It wasn't everything else in the philosophy. It was the journey, I know, for my dad and for so many other people, of Prabhupada, is what, like, okay, he obviously came because he had some deep truth that he wanted to share. He had some deep truth that he wanted to share. Otherwise, why would you go through the trouble? You know, like, it's not like he was coming here for fame. Right? It was sort of the ship owner, I'm forgetting her name now, Sumati Muraji. She said that you're going to die there, Swamiji. You're going to go to the U.S. at this age with this help. You're going to go and die there. Like, those are the wishes you receive. Imagine you're going on a journey. Someone says, you know, you might die there. You could die in a car accident there. You know, your plane could crash if you're going. That was the kind of the words that he heard. I believe one of his sons came to see him off, actually. But, you know, it was, I think it's that journey that speaks volumes. Actually, it's really no different than the Abhagavatam story. Like, with the suffering that Prahlad Maharaj went through, he had his own journey before seeing the Lord, right? Dhruva Maharaj had his own journey being offended. Obviously, he had a much different upbringing and much more luxurious accommodations when he became a king. But still, every journey is so unique. And these journeys are, for me, I like to focus on the journeys. I think that's what allows us to relate to our acharyas in so many different ways. And we all have our own unique journeys. Every single one of us has our own unique journey that has brought us to this point. And this journey didn't just start in this lifetime. It started, we really don't know when. It started the moment we left the spiritual world. So it's been a long journey for us as well. Our journey to come to this point started when we left the spiritual world and entered the material world. Where exactly in the material world we entered, we don't even know that. It could have been this planet, it could have been who knows which planet. But that's when our journey to get back started. But we know that this world is like an upside down banyan tree. Lots of branches and lots of entangling and confusing things that we experiment with here, explore here, go here. Eventually, our journey will get us to wherever we're supposed to go. And And one journey is not better than another's, right? So there's no point in comparing my journey to someone else's journey, thinking my journey is more powerful or better. Everyone's journey is unique, and it's beautiful in its own way. And everyone's learning the lessons that they're meant to learn as they move forward in their Krishna consciousness, or whatever path they're following. And the big part of the process is the whole anartha nivritti, right? Cleansing our heart. And I think we can agree that is going to be the longest part of our journey, is cleansing the heart. Because we have so much conditioning, or if you want to call it, unwanted tendencies in the heart. And that literally is going to be the hardest part of the journey, to be able to cleanse the heart of all of those things. And we can't rush that process either. The cleansing process can't be rushed. It has to be taken at our own pace. If we try to move, if we compare our journey and our process and our pace to someone else's, that may not be very healthy. That may be encouraging or discouraging. If you love the way someone's making progress in a healthy, positive way, you model your journey after them, great. But we don't want to say that, oh my gosh, like this person's so pure and I'm nowhere. That's okay. You are where you're meant to be. And in your eyes, you may think that this person's very advanced, but maybe they may not be, we don't know. Or maybe you think someone's not that advanced and they may be super advanced. The point is, we don't know. And best, therefore, to focus on our own journey, our relationship with the devotees, our relationship with Prabhupada, our relationship with Krishna and all of his devotees. It's best, really, best use of our time is to stay focused on our journey. Right? Because we can't control someone else's journey. We can try, but we're going to fail miserably. Like Krishna at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's one of my favorite passages. He tells Arjuna, I've told you everything I wanted to tell you. You can meditate on it and then do as you wish to do. So Krishna is not attached to Arjuna following his path. Krishna told him what he thinks is best. For sure, it's coming from the mouth of God, so obviously it's the best thing he can do. But he's saying you don't have to do it. You can do something else if you wanted to. Because Krishna is detached. And so I think that's the lesson that we can learn from Krishna, is that when we talk to others about Krishna consciousness, we should be detached. We shouldn't get upset if they choose not to. I know it's hard. But we have to follow Krishna's example here. As great men do, common men follow. So we're the common people. Krishna's a great person. He's detached. If Arjuna wants to, after all of this, still wants to go into the forest and be a renunciate and ignore everything else, Krishna, yeah, it's up to you. You know, you're on your journey. I'm here with you. I'm here to guide you. But if you want to go that route, you can. Krishna's not losing a night of sleep, because there's trillions of souls out there doing what they want to do. So Krishna's not losing any sleep if Arjuna wants to go into the forest and try to be a mendicant and end up probably creating a lot of chaos in the forest, go on a hunting spree 24/7 just to take out his Kshatriya nature, right? So that's the thing. We can't ignore our nature. So, and even in the Gita, Krishna gives a lot of gradations of what somebody can do. It's like, surrender to me fully, but if you can't do that, in the 12th chapter, there's a gradation explained. I don't remember the exact details of it. If you can't fully surrender, then, you know, become detached. If you can't do that, try to serve others. If not, just at least do some good in the world. Like, at least something. Like, do some good. Don't, like, hurt people and rob and steal and do all. At least do good in the world. And then gradually, you can come up to a higher level where you surrender and, you know, you worship me. So, and Krishna, I feel like, is very, very, has a very broad approach. As devotees, we become fanatic, but Krishna is very broad. Even Prabhupada was very broad. He treated so many of his disciples according to where they were at in their journey. See, Prabhupada was expert at recognizing journeys. Sometimes, you know, he could see if somebody couldn't perform sadhana, he would encourage them to do what they could. Someone's good at cooking, okay, you do that, okay, you do that, okay, you do that. He set out the rules and regulations, and then he made accommodations for people. Because if you're trying to push everybody through one hole, it's not going to work. It's just not, because we're all unique. We're all different. We all have a unique relationship with Prabhupada and Krishna. And that has to be respected. And Prabhupada respected that relationship, and Krishna respected that relationship. And I think the least we can do to follow in their example is to respect each other's journey, wherever they're at. Be respectful of that. Give them the space to pursue what they're pursuing. And we don't control anyone's journey, do we? Like, literally. We really don't have control over anyone else's journey. And why should we? So, anyways, I want us to just sort of meditate on our own journeys. And it's really amazing to look back at our journey and see where we've come. We'll see some ups and downs in our journey. And there may be many more ups and downs waiting for us too. There may be. There probably are going to be. And that's fine. That's part of the journey. No road is smooth. You know, you come off the highway, 235, you turn into the temple, it's a smooth road, and all of a sudden it turns to a dirt road, and now there's a speed bump there. She said, there's even, you know, some rough patch, and then there's lots of dust and dirt flying, you just washed your car, and all of a sudden you gotta go back to car wash. So you see, even coming to the temple, there's a few bumps and dirt and pebbles on the road here, right? So it's part of the journey. Some parts are smooth, then there's turns. Sometimes you slow down, go from 55 miles an hour to 20 miles an hour, and then you can speed up again. So there's no road that's just always steady. We want to get to a point where no matter how many bumps and turns and dirt and things there are on the road, potholes, that we remain steady. But the road's always going to have, the road is going to be varied. And we can't be too hard on ourselves to adjust to the ever-changing landscape of our own journey in Krishna consciousness. Because it is a journey. And it's a great one. The fact that we're even on the journey is incredible. The fact that we're on this journey is absolutely incredible. That we've come this far. How much further we have, we actually don't know. We don't know. And are we going back to God in this life? We don't know. We may be. We may not be. But I think for me at least, the key thing is to stay focused on the journey. And in this moment right now. So on this round, on this mantra. Because if we focus on what's too far ahead, then you're not even focusing on this mantra. Then you're not even focusing on the arati, on the deity when doing the arati. So if we focus on that, that means the next step will be more positive, and then the next step will be even more positive, and then the next step will be even more positive. Like during the battle of Kurukshetra, the Pandavas and all the warriors were focused on the battle. They were focused on that enemy they were fighting in the moment. They weren't thinking that, oh, one day we're going to renounce and go into the Himalayas. And they weren't meditating on that. Right now, they have to do the battle. So to be present, to being focused. Because that was part of their journey in that moment. They had to go into a battle. Probably one of the most brutal things you can do as an occupation. Be a soldier during war. Oof. Rough, the kind of stuff you got to see. Worse than any horror movie that any of us have seen. But they're focused. And that's part of their journey. And every one of us is going to have our occupation, our family life, all these things. They're all part of the journey. It's all the journey. And we can be grateful for it. Our journey may be difficult. We may think, oh, others journeys are easier? They're not. We just don't know about it. Every time I thought someone else's journey was easy, I got to know them a little. I'm like, oh, okay, I had no idea. There are these kind of speed bumps in your journey. So, and that's the beauty of the journey, I think. And just important to appreciate that. And I was taking this one item here I wanted to just briefly focus on. In text 122, it talks about standing up before the deity and the spiritual master just to show respect to them. As I was reading that, I remembered this story from the Bhagavatam. I'll read it. I haven't made a note of it. It says, once upon a time, Indra, the king of the demigods, was sitting with his wife Sachi Devi and being praised by the various demigods, like the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, and when Brihaspati, the spiritual master, walked into that assembly. And because everybody was singing for Indra, he was very, that means he was enjoying that. I think if everybody started singing my praises, as much as I'd say, oh, Prabhu, don't, internally I'm like, man, this is great. This is incredible. It's the moment I've been waiting for. I've achieved the goal of life. So Indra was being glorified, and he's got like the best singers singing, the best dancers dancing, everyone's glorifying him, and the spiritual master walks in. And he basically says that being too absorbed in material opulence, he forgot himself and did not respect Brihaspati. He did not stand up. And at that point, Brihaspati, he understood Indra's mind that, okay, he's really filled with pride. And so he immediately disappeared from that assembly. I mean, that's part of Indra's journey. Well, we can't judge Indra. I mean, he's been put there by Krishna. We cannot judge him. We cannot talk down about whatever he did. He's an elevated soul. We have to always remember, no matter what he's done, raining down, you know, the Samvartika clouds, he gets to see Krishna at the end of the thing. We do stupid stuff. We don't get to see Krishna at the end of the day. He does. So that means there's a connection there we can't judge. Absolutely. Otherwise, it's an offense to a devotee. Straight up. So, this was a test that he wasn't expecting. Indra wasn't expecting Brihaspati to walk in. Sometimes we get tested. We're not expecting the test. That's why it's a test. It's a pop quiz. We get a pop quiz. You're thinking you're all humble. I'm doing good. I'm chanting. I'm humble. And all of a sudden someone comes, hey, Prabhu, can you clean that up over there? I'm like, no. Ah, pop quiz. Fail. Right? It's interesting. As soon as I've had that so many times. Every time I'm thinking I'm elevated, I like fail a pop quiz. It happens so many times, it's like, okay, yeah. Every time I let something get to my head, like I'm about to, you know, something's gonna show up. But it doesn't show up when you expect it to. It could show up a couple days later, a week later, a month later, just when you least expect it. Krishna throws something to like test your pride and test your advancement. And so this was an incredible test. Right in the, and Indra could have been sitting peacefully by the garden and Brihaspati comes in. He could have been meditating when Brihaspati comes in. Brihaspati comes in when he's getting glorified. Like, it wasn't like the worst moment, right? He comes in and Indra just like ignores him. But then as soon as he leaves, Indra comes out of his intoxication of glorification. That, uh-oh, and he looks for him everywhere. Nowhere to be found. All of his, because of his disrespectful behavior towards the spiritual master, Indra lost all his opulences, was conquered by the demon. Serious test. It's not just like he felt bad and he prayed to the deity. He lost everything. Major humbling experience. Like to be humble. And this is Indra. And his loss got recorded in the Puranas and the Bhagavatam for people to read for millions of years. That's some serious humbling going on. So that's the thing. The higher you are, the more trust Krishna places in you and the more responsibility he gives you, the more is expected. And the more severe the consequences, actually. Right? The more severe the consequences. Ultimately, Indra goes, they go and take shelter of Lord Brahma, and then Brahma chastises them for their offense. And then the situation gradually, it's a very long story, things get resolved. But I, as I was reading this, I was thinking that this is of all the 28, 30 different things that we're supposed to do, the instructions Sanatana Goswami received, this one somehow stuck out to me, to respect the spiritual masters, to stand up to respect them. And of course, not just the spiritual master, offering respect to as many devotees, as many people, is just a, it just builds our character. Because as we start respecting others, even who are not devotees, so what? We see them as devotees. We see them as parts and parcels of Krishna. So why not offer respect? Offering respect can only be good for us. No harm is going to come if we develop the quality of respecting others. Respecting, however, like it could be, obviously, it's easy to respect the deity. Come bow down. Deity's not telling you anything, not giving you instructions. Easy to respect the spiritual master. You make vows, right? They're senior to you. They're older than you. And you made the decision. They made the decision. Easier to do that. But when it comes to respecting our own peers, devotees, that becomes harder because there's familiarity. And in that respect, we also shouldn't lose the idea of friendship, though. You can be friends and joke with each other. Krishna and Arjuna joke with each other. They really joke with it, just like, you know, guys can joke with each other. Krishna and Arjuna would do that with each other, too. That's why at one point, Arjuna, when he saw the universal form, he asked Krishna that, oh, I'm really sorry that we laughed together, we joked together, we laid together, and I would just kind of treat you like a buddy. Krishna, and they would joke with each other, make fun of each other, just like guys do. So you can be respectful and still have that friendship. So sometimes we don't want to ruin our friendship in like this pretense of just like false respect. Kind of. I mean, you could be respectful and friendly, right? So, and then, you know, so learning to respect our peers, our friends in Krishna consciousness, our family members. Respect has to be literally everywhere, right? And then the closer someone is, the harder it is to offer respect. So the closest people to you are usually your family members. And that's where we kind of let it fly, right? So, and that is hard. That is part of our test. That's part of our journey, to be able to develop that respectful attitude to as many people as possible, because that ultimately is going to please Krishna. Paramatma is inside everyone's heart. And when we respect someone, we're respecting Krishna. So these are, and of all of these different processes that is mentioned, dancing before the deity, singing before the deity, praying, worshiping, serving. Each one of us may relate, we may be more called to one over the other. And that's fine. Everyone's journey is different and unique. So we should see what we're being called to. But I think the idea of showing respect is something that is universal that we all need to adopt more and more of. At the same time, see which of these processes we're more attracted to. And you know, pursue them. So anyways, I'd like to stop here. And we have a few minutes if anybody has a question or comment. Yes.
Can you speak about what like what that respect means, like what it looks like and how to practice it more?
What does respect look like? What does it mean and how to practice it more? I think respect will look differently depending on who you're interacting with. Kind of a hard question, actually. It requires you to really think about it. At least being acknowledging that Krishna's in their heart, right? And how can I at least be nice to this person? How can I be kind? How can I try to serve them? Right? Being kind, being nice, how can I serve this individual? And there's always opportunity to serve, right? You see somebody wanting to, an elderly person trying to cross the street, well, that's a way of showing respect, helping them. I think having a mood of just trying to serve others to the best of our capacity, not putting ourselves in danger or just, you know, but like trying to serve, that is a sign that you're respecting them, that Krishna's in their heart and you're respecting them. So I think the more, and also we respect others by respecting their own belief system. Not necessarily trying to convert everyone, trying to, if you meet a Christian, trying to communicate that we're higher and you're lower. That's not respecting their belief system. Or you have a colleague at work and they eat meat. Respecting their belief system. We don't have to try to convince the world. Let's just follow our own path, right? So respecting their belief system. Because we also have a tendency to judge people very quickly. Oh, this person's not serving nicely. Oh, this person's like this. Oh, this person's like that. That in one sense is disrespecting. Right? Disrespecting them. Whether they're doing is right or wrong, that's up to them. It's between them and Krishna. They have their own karmic reactions, good and bad. So respect can have many different sort of levels. But at least respecting people's beliefs, actions, we may not agree with it. We can keep a healthy distance so we don't become more critical. If possible, keep a distance. But at least let them go on their journey. Yeah.
Okay, well then there's also, I mean, there's the Prabhupada story, like somebody's, you know, on the roof flying a kite, walking backwards, and he's about to fall off the roof, and you just gotta yell at him, hey, dummy. You know, stop, or please stop nicely, you know, whatever. You know, sometimes you just got to lay it out there for their own benefit. It's not like your kid's acting up, running in the street, and you just say, oh, well, that's your journey, you know, I mean, there's a car coming. You know, so I would imagine at some point, okay, let's turn this whole thing around. Let's say someone is meditating on what their journey is, and they decide, well, my journey is just to go around, like I'm from New York or something, and I'm just going around and tell everybody what it's like to their face, you know, that's their journey. So then we just got to respect that too, I suppose.
Well, we keep a respectful distance from that. Let them go on their own journey. If they want to get enough rope to hang themselves, well, you know, what are you going to do? We're not the karmic police officer. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. If you're a spiritual teacher of someone, then you may have to talk some sense into them. If you're a parent, you have to talk some sense into your kids. And it just, we have to see, are we in the position to talk to someone where they'll receive it? And of course, if you see someone in danger, you might have to yell, hey, watch out, you know? So yeah, time, place, circumstance, common sense, you have to use. Thank you very much. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Radha Shyam Sundar ki, Jai Gopinath.